5 minutes past the hour of 3 on Your Women Radio, WFM 91.7, Nigeria's only radio station for women and their families. Good afternoon and welcome to Women Voices for Peace. Today we're discussing United to End Violence Against Women and Girls in Nigeria, 16 Days of Activism. According to a study commissioned by Nigeria's Ministry of Women Affairs and Social Development and the United Nations Population Fund, Nigeria has long been facing a gender-based violence crisis, with 30% of women and girls aged 15 to 49 having experienced sexual abuse. Gender-based violence, GBV, is the most pervasive yet least visible human rights violation in the world. It includes physical, sexual, mental, or economic harm inflicted on a person because of socially ascribed power imbalances between males and females. Based on this premise, today we're discussing United to End Violence Against Women and Girls in Nigeria, 16 Days of Activism. I'm discussing this today with Brenda Anogwam, lawyer and expert on gender matters. Good afternoon, Brenda. How are you doing today?
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today. I hope your day has been going well.
Very well, thank you.
Awesome. Great to hear. To join the conversation, please call the number 07000-917-917, and you can also send a text or a WhatsApp message to 0703-175-6537. 0703-175-6537. The number to call, 07000-917-917. You can also reach us and follow us at WFM917 on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So as we discuss, you can join the conversation. Again, the number to call is 07000-917-917. You can send a text or a WhatsApp message to 0703-175-6537. If you're just joining us, you're welcome to Women Voices for Peace. My name is Sumto Titilayo Ajamma, and I'm discussing today with Brenda Anogwam, lawyer and expert on gender matters. So let's dive right into the conversation, Brenda.
Yes.
Tell me why you think it's important to focus on gender-based violence against women and girls.
Thank you again, Sonia, for having me. I'm so excited because in 2 weeks we'll start officially the campaign for Mothers Between Women's Activism. The gender-based violence is a serious human rights violation. It is a global pandemic. It's happening all over the world. And it affects so many women and girls globally. That is why it is important to focus on gender-based violence against women and girls, or as some people like to call it, violence against women and girls.
Hmm.
According to statistics from the World Bank, it is estimated that about 5% of women globally have experienced either physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. And this has great financial implications. The World Bank estimates that violence against women and girls costs some countries up to 3.7% of their GDP, which is more than what most governments spend on education. So it can be expensive to economies and indeed to the whole world.
Mm.
Hence the importance of the focus on gender-based violence. And you know, what are these costs that we're talking about? It's costly because there's cost that goes into investigating cases that lead to prosecution. It costs involved in the actual prosecution if there's an established case of abuse or violence. There is also cost for providing support to survivors and so on. So you see, in times of conflict, unrest, or crisis, the threat of gender-based violence significantly increases, especially in women and girls. For instance, in 2019, the COVID-19 lockdown, I mean, last year, we experienced global lockdown. The number of gender-based violence cases increased exponentially globally. Bringing home here to Nigeria, I was part of a team that conducted a national research on gender-based violence earlier this year. And one of my findings, which was shocking to me, was that in the city of the FCT, where there's about 98% of literate women who are educated, at least to a reasonable extent, the number of gender-based violence cases spiked, increased so high. Well, when we went to the communities in the outskirts of the FCT, where you have women with about 29% literacy level, they're more elite there. We hardly find people who spoke English. We found that gender-based violent cases reduced. So I had to probe further. And then I asked, one of the women leaders in Pidgin, which is what she could understand, and she told me that they were glad that their husbands were home with them, so that reduced the violence. On the other hand, in the city center where you have more educated people, the violence is greater. So it makes me wonder whether there is a correlation between
literacy and gender-based violence. Because I was literally about to ask you, okay, is there a link? Is there a connection? Based on your findings, because that was definitely surprising for me to hear. I can imagine how taken aback you were when you saw the findings.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's why it's important for us to focus on gender-based violence. Thank you.
This is enlightening, definitely, because I would not for the life of myself have imagined that there is any kind of correlation between literacy and gender-based violence. But on the flip side, when you look at it logically, it technically, I mean, nothing makes sense when it comes to gender-based violence, because women and girls should not be subject to that kind of violence violence of any sort generally in the first place. That's why I said nothing makes sense. But technically, if you look at it from a logical point of view, it makes sense when they said, oh, because they were happy to have their husbands home, that is probably why the rates of gender-based violence decreased. Because, when they're present, you now want to do everything you can to please them, to make sure that there are no arguments, nothing that can escalate into violence. And if you look at it from the flip side, on the side of the more literate women, then because their husbands are more home, they are present as well. There are no extra working hours or anything. And then there's more rift, because when two people are present in the same house a lot of time, you can technically predict arguments, disagreements, which could escalate. Thank you very much for sharing those findings. Really, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Now, you're
talking about the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. We are proponents of that particular cause because we know here at Women Radio what gender-based violence does to people. And we are advocates of sharing, of creating more awareness on that. But despite the amount of awareness that we think that we're putting out there or that we're doing our best to put out there, it's still important that we keep repeating it. So for that purpose, I would like you to explain what the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence is basically about.
Thank you. So, you see, the 16 days of activism is an annual international campaign that runs from November 25th to the 10th of December, which is the International Human Rights Day. It started in 1991, and it is used as an organizing strategy by individuals and organizations around the world call for the prevention and elimination of violence against women and girls. Now, this year's theme is Owing to the World, End Violence Against Women Now.
Mm.
Here in Nigeria, we do observe these things primarily to draw attention to the gross human rights abuses. It is public awareness to the fact that there are laws prohibiting violence against persons and, of course, intimate people of possible sanctions when found guilty of any act of violence as prescribed by the law. The FCT, the Violence Against Persons Act 2015, came into existence to help curb this scourge of violence that, as we are all here in this country, we are experiencing daily. For example, just recently, it was in the news that persons were kidnapped from the University of Abuja. Kidnapped is an act of violence recognized under the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act. Yeah. The act prohibits under Section 10 the deprivation of one's liberty. So it is important to raise these issues and create awareness as a means to curbing violence against women and girls. That is one of 16 days of activism. And in a nutshell, that's what it's all about. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for saying it in a very simple way. I was hoping that it would be communicated in a way that even the average person can listen and understand, and I'm glad that you did that. Thank you so much. Now, action is one thing. Or let me put it this way. Awareness is one thing. Action is another thing. It's important that people get to know what gender-based violence is. It's also important that people are aware of all the various forms that it can happen and laws in place to combat gender-based violence and so on and so forth. But putting these forms of awareness or putting these things that we are now aware of into action to get results now, that is a whole other business. What does it take to move from awareness to action in reference to the 16 Days of Activism campaign? What does it take to move from just the awareness of it to the action of it on curbing violence against women and girls?
Thank you so much for that question. What it takes a whole lot. For the passage of the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act in 2015 is one step, and that's a step by the state. So it takes both political will and social will to move awareness to action in this campaign. Mm. It has to start with you and I. Together we can stand for what is right. You see, a great man once said that if you don't stand up for something, you will die standing for nothing.
Mm.
Moving awareness to action involves activities like media engagement, like we're doing now, talking about it. It requires collaboration of both governmental and non-governmental entities. Gender-based violence is a scourge that affects everyone, and even economies, as I mentioned earlier, that it actually costs economies so much. So it should be everybody's business. Bringing awareness to action involves pressure groups, religious and faith-based institutions, spreading the message, keeping members of the public informed that perpetrating acts of violence on women and girls is reprehensible and should be avoided at all costs. That's actually what sparked the MeToo movement globally.
Mm.
It requires action from the political class. It is vital that every state domesticates the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act. A lot of states have, but we're submitting for the others to domesticate it as well. And the offenders should be sanctioned accordingly.
Mm.
Like I said earlier, violence against women and girls is a global scourge. It is a pandemic. And so the action should be taken together collectively in partnership with international bodies. But whenever there is a grave act of injustice or violence somewhere around the world, anywhere actually, you will hear global campaigns because we are going back to 2018 in Sudan, when the Justice for Laura campaign started globally over the death sentence of a lady, a young woman, Laura, who was accused of murder. It was due to the global outcry that her conviction, that her death sentence conviction, was commuted to 5 years imprisonment and a restitution fee of an amount equivalent to about $18,000. Laura was forced to marry a much older man who eventually raped her in front of his witnesses, and as a result, she killed him. That was why she was sentenced to death. Thank God for the global outcry. At least if she starts her time, she should be able to come out and do something good with her life. In 2014, in India, a 14-year-old girl was sentenced to convict rape by the village head because her brother was accused of having an affair with a married woman. There was a global outcry again against her. So this is the power of putting awareness to action. The whole world is involved, the whole world is taking part. And that's why here in Nigeria, recently, there's been a cry for justice for Karen, a 14-year-old girl in FCT who died as a result of an infection she contracted after being raped. So the Nigeria also asking for justice, or rather, the release of Gloria, a young girl, a young woman, a 21-year-old lady, arrested in Nigeria, and taken all the way to Abuja. According to reports, her offense was she was a girlfriend to a member of the proscribed group. And then, if you're arrested, you should be in police custody. But it has been alleged that the officers turned her into their personal domestic staff. There is no part of our law that allows the person to be arrested on suspicion of anything to be servicing officers who arrested her. The arrested person should be charged to court for whatever crime it is that she was arrested. And then they should be remanded in custody throughout the trial or released on bail as the court pleases. That's how it works. So when we have this global outcry, you see awareness being moved into action. And just yesterday, there was news about the Chinese player, tennis player, who was missing, who publicly accused a former Chinese vice premier of sexual assault. She suffered yesterday. It took the outcry of the Women's Tennis Association, the United Nations, and other international tennis heavyweights like Naomi Osaka, Serena Williams, to draw attention to her ordeal and why she suffered nothing. So there is a lot that can be done to bring awareness to action. And the basic unit of society, of course, is not left out. That is family. Parents should teach their children from the start to respect the dignity of persons. That no form of violence is acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. 23 minutes past the hour of 3 on Your Women Radio, WFM 91.7. This is Women Voices for Peace. And today we're discussing united to end violence against women and girls in Nigeria, 16 days of activism. United to end violence against women and girls in Nigeria, 16 days of activism. I'm speaking today to Brenda Anugwam, lawyer and expert on gender matters. So if you are just joining us and you want to contribute to the conversation, you can do well to call the number 07000-917-917. You can also send in a text message or a WhatsApp message to 0703-175-6537. Now, Brenda, you've talked about all the things that can be done to go from awareness to action in reference to the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. But I want more people to know what types of gender-based violence to even be aware of in the first place. As I said earlier, it's one thing to know. It's also another thing to be conscious of what you know. So it's like, I know that I'm a Nigerian, but I don't know what it means to be Nigerian when it relates to my culture and how it is to live in Nigeria and what rules apply here in this country. So it's one thing to know one thing. It's also another thing to be conscious of that knowledge that you have, because that's the only way it can inform any form of action, actually. Now, tell me what you think, or what some forms of violence are, some forms of gender-based violence, or some types, if you please, of gender-based violence. What are three major types? Just tell me three major types of gender-based violence that people, women and girls, even men as well, can look out for.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Gender-based violence can be classified into physical violence or abuse, emotional violence or abuse, and economic violence. I'll classify them into these three headings, and I will explain.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional violence can also be called psychological violence or mental violence. All three of them fit in the same category.
Okay.
Some people like to classify sexual violence separately, but I prefer to lump it with physical violence, because it has to do with acts affecting the human body.
Mm.
So let's take them one after the other. Economic violence, it involves acts that negatively affect one's livelihood or one's ability to provide for themselves. It's prohibited under Section 12 of the Violence Against Persons Act, 2015. The Act actually refers to economic violence or abuse as forced financial dependence, which can range from denial of access to sustenance or livelihood, to making a person unable to fend for themselves or subjected to dependence on another in order to survive. Let's look at a typical scenario. In a family, of course, where there's a man, a woman, and children, and of course the man is the breadwinner. If the man ceases to take care of the children or provide for them, and perhaps, as it is very rampant these days, leaves them, abandons them, and runs away, he exposes the woman to economic violence.
Hmm.
In fact, in the FCT, the Abuja Municipal Area Council Office has a department where such men who flee from taking care of responsibility are forced to deposit money periodically for the upkeep of their abandoned family. And I use the term forced because if there was no arm of the law chasing them, they wouldn't be depositing money. So they're made to come there on a monthly basis or maybe quarterly to deposit an amount of money that will be sent to the wife and children for upkeep. Because such things amount to economic violence. And of course, economic violence also can be one when somebody's wages are not paid, or when you performed an activity or work for someone and they don't pay you. That is also economic violence. Because recently we saw Nigerian female basketballers, the Tigress, make an appeal via social media for their wages and unpaid allowances that accrued in 2019. Even though this amount has been paid, but for them to bring it to the front burner and the claim that it was since 2019, that is economic violence. They have been paid, actually, from what we have been told, but we don't really have to wait for people to call out the Basketball Federation or embarrass the country before they are paid.
Before they do what they're supposed to do.
So now we look at the second one, emotional violence or mental violence.
Or psychological violence.
Section 4 of the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act prohibits all forms of intimidation or threat to life. Because when you're intimidated, it can affect your psychological balance. Section 14 prohibits verbal abuses and emotional torture. When people call other people names because they can, sometimes it triggers something. This is usually rampant when there is a power imbalance. someone is more powerful than the other, perhaps highly connected, you know, as we say in our local parlance.
Yes,
or someone is your boss and pays your wages. You know, when someone pays your wages, they feel maybe they owe you, and they believe it is okay to speak to you in an unacceptable tone of voice, even call you names. I remember speaking to a woman once, and I told her that somewhere where I used to work so many years ago, if you talk to anybody in any tone of voice that is unacceptable, irrespective of the fact that you are the person's boss, you'd be disciplined. And she was shocked. She said, what if it's your boss? He has the right to shout on you. Can you imagine that? But she just seems not to know that even our law prohibits it. You know, because such can cause mental trauma.
Absolutely.
It can shatter one's reasoning.
And that can span into other areas of one's life. Hello, Brenda, are you there? Hello, Brenda. All right. Half past three, your Women Radio W from 91.7. Today, we're discussing United to End Gender-Based Violence. And this is United to End specifically violence against women and girls in Nigeria. 16 days of activism. United to End Violence Against Women and Girls in Nigeria. 16 days of activism. All right. I was discussing with Brenda Anugwam, lawyer and expert on gender matters. And she's going to rejoin us. But in the meantime, we're discussing United to End Gender-Based Violence in Nigeria, 16 days of activism. Now, it's important that we understand the fact that gender-based violence is something that is existing. It's in existence. It's very much prevalent in our society. And then we need to curb it. We need to curb it, which is what the entire concept of 16 days of activism against gender-based violence is about. I have Brenda Anugwam back on the line. And we are continuing the conversation on 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, specifically in reference to United to End Violence Against Women and Girls in Nigeria. Brenda, good to have you again.
Yes, thank you for getting me back. So I was talking about emotional violence. Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so I was talking about emotional violence, and I was saying that calling people names or yelling at them can cause emotional imbalance and sometimes makes people lose confidence.
True.
And you know, in Nigeria, mental health awareness is very low and is seldomly discussed openly. So people feel ashamed to admit mental struggles openly.
True.
I was listening to a motivational speaker the other day, and he said Nigerians are living in a trauma chamber because we are constantly traumatized by the oppressive system, by people believing that you can shout at them or talk to them anyhow because they're your boss.
And or because they're even older, generally.
Well, if you are aware of what the law provides, you will know that it is not right. There are people who know people in high places or in corridors of power, and then they behave anyhow, intimidate people, because they know that the powers that be has their back. This is emotional or psychological violence. So the third one is the physical violence or abuse, which I mentioned earlier, that is related to the human body.
Yes.
Exposing oneself indecently is physical violence, even if you don't touch the person. Under Section 26 of the Violence Against Persons Act, indecent exposure constitutes sexual violence.
Indecent exposure of oneself.
Absolutely. Of oneself, even if you don't touch your victim. But I remember a case where somebody was caught. He said, no, I didn't touch her. I only unzipped and showed her. But she never asked you, she never consented for you to
she
show her. So doing that alone, doing that alone is sexual violence. Beating up somebody, of course, battery, you know, inflicting injury on them. Section 2 of the Violence Against Persons Act prohibits this as well. Even harmful widowhood practices, like shaving a woman's head with a bottle or a razor blade, or tying her to her husband's corpse overnight.
Or making her drink all the water washed from her husband's corpse.
Or making her drink, thank you, dirty water. That's also...
physical violence.
Female genital mutilation, FGM, is prohibited under Section 6 of the Violence Against Persons Act. It is physical violence. Political violence is also part of physical violence. We all remember the woman who was burned to death in 2019.
That's true.
Uh-huh. And also forcing someone to perform an act that they don't want to is also physical violence. Coercion is physical violence. Hmm. Section 3 of the Act totally prohibits it.
So this is why you linked sexual violence to physical violence.
So physical, absolutely, because it has to do with the human body. So broadly, these are the classification or categories of gender-based violence. Hmm. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brenda. I think we need more enlightenment, more awareness, more sensitization, more advocacy on the details of gender-based violence. I think more people are aware of it on from an umbrella perspective. You know, they hear about gender-based violence. They know that, okay, no man should lift his hand to hit another woman. Even no woman should do the same thing to another woman. They're aware of these things. But when it comes to the fine print, the little details, just as you've rightly explained, physical, sexual, emotional, psychological, economic violence, even political violence that you mentioned just now, some people, I think a good amount of people, are not aware of the details that are involved when it comes to gender-based violence, and we definitely need more enlightenment on that. But that's on one aspect. So knowing, just as you've explained, is very, very, very important. It cannot be overemphasized. But now that we have heard this from you, how can we be united to end violence against women and girls in Nigeria? Yes, we know that violence against women and girls is a thing, but we also know that men are involved in this mix somewhere. Because if we're talking about violence against women and girls, then automatically somebody is inflicting that violence. But they're not necessarily the only people that are factors here. They're not, just as you mentioned, as long as there's power imbalance, your boss can inflict emotional violence on you. And it's possible that you are in all these situations without even knowing that you're in these situations, knowing them as what they are. So how can we be united to end violence against women and girls in Nigeria?
Well, it's GBV, gender-based violence against women and girls. We need education.
More education.
You see, absolutely. Educating the public on what constitutes violence, like we are doing now, and the repercussions, is very crucial. As I mentioned earlier, education can be a primary focus in schools. In fact, it should be built into the curriculum as part of ethics and good conduct. The children should grow up learning the harm that this scourge is causing the society. They can try to avoid acts of violence if they know that it's going to harm them as they grow up, or even harm the society that they live in. We also need education up to the highest cadre of the society, not just the children and young people. Government agencies need to invest in training and retraining on different forms of violence and what constitutes them. The private sector of organizations should have a do no harm policy in their staff manual. There should be a clause covering all forms of harassment and prohibiting it in the staff handbook. And then offenders should be punished, because whenever there is lack of punishment, there is impunity. Every country where offenders are left to go scot-free, impunity is the result. So secondly, NGOs, CSOs, the media, governmental and non-governmental organizations should come together and partner with international bodies to spread the message. Because as this year's theme states, end violence against women now, the UN already has launched a program which they call Unite by 2030 to end violence against women and girls. And this should be everybody's vision. The UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who, by the way, is a he for she, has called for global action to increase awareness. And so national NGOs should reach out and connect internationally, and everyone should speak with one voice. Thirdly, there should be an enforcement of the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act. It is crucial if we want to fight the scourge, because once an offender is convicted and punished, others will learn. And perpetrators, when they're arrested, they should be arrested in a manner specified by law and duly prosecuted. And by that, I mean agents of state should not go overboard. If you're arresting someone, arrest the person. When you arrest and cause more harm or damage to the society, it just makes the whole thing worse. Some time ago, we saw on TV, one of the media houses aired a video of agents of state burning buildings while trying to attack criminals who are, you know, who they accosted. So, I mean, when you set buildings ablaze, you are helping
breaking the law too.
Not just that, you're helping to increase the infrastructure deficit, which our government has been, you know, highlighting and screaming against.
That's true.
You just go and take the perpetrator, arrest him, and then move, don't burn down buildings. We expect that agents of state should protect the country from foreign invaders. On the news again, we heard that some group called the Ambazonia from Cameroon invaded a village in Taraba State and killed people. Now, these are the people that agents of state are supposed to fight. Get them away from harming us. Because a country that is at war with itself will open the door for foreign invaders to come in easily. And we should also know that for every man that is killed, there's a possibility that a widow has been left somewhere.
Absolutely.
So a vulnerable person has been left. Somebody who has been economically violated has been left. Absolutely. So these are the steps that we can take in order to curb gender-based violence against women and girls. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now, this is 17 minutes to 3 to 4 on your Women Radio WFM 91.7. We're still having the conversation around United to End Violence Against Women and Girls in Nigeria, 16 days of activism. Now, I'm in a conversation with Brenda Anugwam, and she is a lawyer and expert on gender matters. We've been talking extensively on this subject, and we're rounding off in just a little bit, but it still bears repetition about the fact that gender-based violence is existing in our society, and it's not just existing, it's very popular, and it definitely needs to be curbed. So this brings me to survivors. This brings me to survivors. So when we say curbing gender-based violence, we also need to understand that there are people who have been hurt already. So we're thinking futuristically when we say we need to curb it, so that more people who have not been victims or survivors of gender-based violence will not even be in that situation to begin with. But there are people who have already gone through this. So how can we help such people? How can we help such survivors of gender-based violence in our community so that they can just be stable again and be positive contributors to society?
Thank you, Sandra. This is a very touching topic because we have a lot of people who have been traumatized, who have gone through every form of violence, but they don't have a way, a channel to go through to get reintegrated into society and also to get help from the mental torture that they've been through. So in order to help them, we need to take, you know, some steps first. According to the UN Women, only about 1 in 10 women said that victims of violence would go to the police to report an incident. So, which means people hardly report this. But when anybody summons the courage and comes forward to report, the first step for the society to do, agencies that are specialized in trauma to do, is to first believe them. That's the first step. Secondly, we should adopt comprehensive and inclusive approaches that tackle the causes of gender-based violence. So, you know, what are these causes? We have sociocultural causes. For instance, the belief that a certain gender is superior to the other and that the other should be seen and not heard. Those are, you know, some of the sociocultural causes. Those cause imbalance. And then, of course, programs should be adopted to educate the public as to the harmful effect of neighborhood practices, just so that it can stop these kind of behavior towards women.
Absolutely.
Also, there should be counseling services to help survivors overcome their trauma. Both state and non-state actors can set up the centers jointly, or they can set them up separately. But there should be centers that will help these survivors. And there should also be survivor-centered essential services. For instance, there should be people who manage, like, a hotline. In some countries, they have the 911. When you call them, they are specially trained to keep you talking and keep you on the phone until help arrives. You know, those sort of things. And they should cut, you know, across all cross-sectors. The justice sector, the health sector, security sector, and so on. Then, on the side, there should also be skills acquisition centers to help empower these survivors. Because sometimes when your mind is busy and you're doing something and becoming productive, you get over the trauma that has just that you are suffering from.
Faster.
And perhaps you forget the violence that has just that you had just experienced. So then finally, there should be sufficient budgeting. And this is for the National Assembly to take on. There should be a line item on the budget specifically to support the needs of survivors of gender-based violence. And I urge NGOs that support legislative work to work with the National Assembly and ensure that there are some, you know, key advocacy steps are taken to ensure that this is done. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for Brenda. Thank you. All right. Before we round off, I would like you to just shed a little bit more light on who gets to participate in the 16 days of activism. We've talked a lot about what gender-based violence is. We've also talked a lot about what the 16 days of activism is. But who participates, who and who can participate in the 16 days of activism campaign?
Thank you so much. Everyone participates. Everyone is involved, and everyone should be involved. The entire world observes these 16 days, and campaigns are run all through. There will be lots and lots of media engagements, going on during that period, and we're expecting influencers to be more active than ever, focusing on gender-based violence. Global bodies like the United Nations, the UNICEF, the European Union, the African Union, and so many more. And then nationally here, or locally here, our NGOs, the civil society, are all going to be participating and raising awareness. And here, there are certain programs the CSOs have designed to educate, inform, and change perspectives on acts of violence and how to avoid them, especially on women and girls. And it's not even November 25th, and we are talking about it on Women Radio. Women Radio has started already, So we would also like state actors to get more involved in the campaign and activity. We know that Ministry of Women Affairs usually spearheads this, so we expect Women Affairs. We also expect some committees of the National Assembly, like Committee on Women in Parliament, a Committee on Women Affairs, and every other non-state actor that helps to fight against violence against women. Everybody is involved.
Everyone.
Thank you.
So bringing it down to the citizenry, bringing it down to citizenry. What is our role here when it comes to participating in the 16 days of gender-based violence, in 16 days of activism against gender-based violence campaign?
Yeah, so our role as individuals, our role as human rights organizations, on the whole, as just civil society fighting against gender-based violence, is to continue the talk. Continue the talk and walk the talk. Mm-hmm. So as we are highlighting what the gender-based violence means and enlightening the public, we should also behave the same way. We should adopt all the strategies that we are laying out and telling people to do. It also behoves us to also walk the talk. We expect that we will be able to come together as the civil society, as women groups or as religious groups, and run programs, launch activities, do media briefings. And we hope that maybe at school, that children will be made to engage in perhaps, theater or work or activities that will help enlighten them and show them the various ways that gender-based violence can harm the society. We also expect organizations that have platforms to speak up. And especially this year, this particular 15 years of activism starting in 2 days' time,
yes,
to speak up and put out strong messaging that will address some of the challenges that we are facing. For instance, we just heard about Justice Meliodas, whose home was invaded, harassed because she's a woman. We should ensure, and then we also heard that those who gave evidence and their witnesses during the NSARS panel are being attacked physically and intimidated. So we expect these issues to be on the front burner of everyone that has a platform and will be using their platform during the 16 days of activism. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brenda. So, before I let you go, I want to hear your final words. Do you have any final words as regards how we can stay united to end gender-based violence?
Absolutely. You actually said the watchword, which is unite. We should all come together, unite for this cause, for this scourge that is ravaging our society, our community, and the global space in general. We should end violence against women. The time is now. We shouldn't wait for any other time. And there's no need to wait for even tomorrow. Let's come together. Together we can end violence against women and girls. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brenda. It's been a pleasure having you today on Women Voices for Peace. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much. Seven minutes to four on Your Women Radio, WFM 91.7. That was my conversation with Brenda Anugwam, lawyer and expert on gender matters, on the subject, United to End Violence Against Women and Girls in Nigeria, 16 Days of Activism. In case you do not understand what the 16 Days of Activism campaign is, I'm sure that listening to Brenda has given you more context on what it is and the fact that everyone is expected to participate in more enlightenment, more advocacy, more sensitization, using your platforms, collaborating with organizations, and just being a part and making your voice heard when it comes to gender-based violence in Nigeria. She also says, in a bid to unite to end violence against women and girls in Nigeria, it's important that the public be educated on what it constitutes to be gender-based violence, or what constitutes gender-based violence, and also the repercussions. She also says another good way would be to incorporate into the curriculum as a basis of ethics of human conduct up to the highest cadre of society. She also says offenders should also be punished, even in the workplace, and these rules should be included in the staff handbook. She also mentioned the fact that partnership of governmental and non-governmental organizations with international bodies is also important, and the scourge of gender-based violence. And the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act should also be enforced, and perpetrators should be duly prosecuted. There also should be sufficient budgeting from the National Assembly to support the needs for gender-based violence survivors. These and more are ways to unite and against gender-based violence in light of the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. GBV disproportionately affects women and girls, and in situations of displacement, the risk of exposure to GBV increases. We should all be committed to continuously strengthening coordination and programming to protect women and girls from GBV. Women Voices for Peace is sponsored by WANEP, West African Network for Peace Building, with support from the Norwegian Agency for Development Cooperation, NORAD, and Women in Peace Building Network, WIPNET. Women Voices for Peace holds every Tuesday on Women Radio 91.7 by 3 p.m. And I want to say a big thank you to our guest today, and also to the engineer on duty and production crew of Taiwo Adeleye, Dabira Oluwagbile, and Victoria Owaifo. Join us again same time next week. My name is Sumtu Titilayo Ajama. Good afternoon. She is very strong, a woman of dignity. She is prayerful, a woman of substance. She is so bad, her beauty na evidence. She's a fire, just a woman.